This is a special edition of Stateside, part of the Life on the Inside series we've brought you this week. I'm Lester Graham. This fall, a dozen Michigan Radio and Stateside reporters and photographers were allowed to spend the day at one of Michigan's prisons.
You have to take your hat and your jacket off.
This was unprecedented for the Department of Corrections. We visited the Lakeland Correctional Facility in Coldwater. While a corrections officer was always with Stateside personnel, we were not restricted in any way in approaching or talking to inmates in the yard, in their sleeping areas, or even if we stopped them in the hallway. Some inmates approached us to either praise the facility or to complain about treatment. Lakeland has a higher than typical number of inmates serving life sentences. In this report, every prisoner you hear is either serving a life sentence or a sentence so long that it is essentially a life sentence. Of the more than 1,400 prisoners, about 640 of them are lifers. That's the highest concentration of any other prison in Michigan. While reporters spread out across the prison, my first job was to talk to the acting warden, Brian Morrison. He was telling me about Lakeland as we walked down a corridor on our way to the prison yard.
It's a minimum security facility, predominantly lifers, which entails prisoners that aren't going home, but they need to have a place where they can end their stay while they're incarcerated. And this, we try to make it the best situation that we can for the prisoners inside this facility.
Oh, this is nice. We just walked out into a garden area.
Yes. This garden area is actually for our food tech program.
I understand the Lakeland Correctional Facility is one of the newer, the nicer prisons. Someone told me if you're going to prison, that's where you want to be. Why is that?
Well, first of all, I'd like to agree with them. I've been here for 19 years. I think this facility does a good job of instilling a purpose in prisoners. Gives them meaning, the reason that they want to continue to do better, and we reward it with a lot of positive atmospheres of things that other people can't see while incarcerated, and it prepares them better for going home. It teaches them a work ethic.
Of course, many of these prisoners are never going home. The Lakeland Correctional Facility is a campus-like setting. Lots of flower and vegetable gardens, green lawns, walking paths, even goldfish ponds the prisoners built. Many of the prisoners here have been in the system for decades, and they say they're grateful for being here.
All of them are terrible. You know, this is one of the better ones because you have more freedom here.
I've been locked up for 25 years this time, and out of all the prisons I've been to, this prison has more to offer guys with life than any other prison. A lot of prisons just got small programs, but this prison has a lot to offer, and I really appreciate some of the things that they offer here.
I like the staff, I like the COs, I like the atmosphere as far as the grounds, and a lot of free time, a lot of yard. There's no other joints like it.
Very good, relaxed, different. It's more open, more relaxed, not too much pressure. Unnecessary stuff, but yeah, it's pretty good. I like it.
I got here in 2007, January 2007. It was a good day because I got to come to a real decent place. Yeah.
Welcome to Stateside's day-long look at life on the inside. Lakeland runs two dog training programs. Select inmates are paired with dogs that are otherwise unadoptable. One program pulls dogs from shelters. The other program receives greyhounds retired from the racetrack. We start our look at the two training programs with a black and white hound dog named Duke and his handler, Martin Pitts. The handler's called Duke a parole violator because he's back in Lakeland for the third time, trying to work out kinks and bad habits.
My name is Martin Pitts. Yeah, here at LCF Dog Program with Big Duke. It's a hound mix, 2 years old. I think the conditions he, you know, grew up in, you know, just being in the backyard tied up with no type of obedience training. His behavior was just all over the place. So, you know, we kind of got him, took him in, been working with him, working on his behaviors.
I'm Patrick Daniels, the current acting classification director here at Lakeland Correctional Facility. Each round, we receive 14 dogs from various animal shelters, and they go through a 10-week process of training, obedience commands, and then some additional tricks besides that. At the conclusion of 10 weeks, they receive their new homes that day.
Where are you going, big boy?
My name is Dennis Tilley. I've been in the dog program for 10 years. I was a dog handler for 4.5, and I've been a clerk for 5.5.
They'll tell you that the guys that socialize with the dog, even the officers and staff, it affects them in the same way, because you're interacting with the dogs and it's a relaxing thing. These dogs, just the energy that's around these dogs, they'll teach you when you're a trainer or a handler that your energy goes through the leash from the dog to you. It's the same thing with one of these dogs. When they go home, it's like your cousin went back to Florida or something, you know, and you miss them.
Grim, come.
Good girl.
My name is Daniel Terryberry. Oh, Wyatt was reactive. So he sees something, he was very more like, what's that noise? So he was more, had noise phobias. But other than that, he just needed some training and some socialization. And man, phenomenal dog. One thing about him is I'm real attached to him. So I have to kind of like look at myself as I'm training him. He's not my dog, but I mean, whoever gets him is going to be lucky. He's just one of them dogs, just, it's not a bulldog, you know? He's just like, he's like human or something.
Daisy, stand. Good girl. Daisy, down. Good girl. Daisy, sit. Yes. Now she's ready. Daisy's a great dog. She's good. Daisy, shake. Good girl.
My name is Douglas Kennedy. This is Gusto. It's a 2-year-old male from Alabama. They come in kind of shy, but they always leave here full of energy, and they adapt to any situation. You know, when they came in here, to adapt to 1,400 guys was a bit much, as much for any of us, you know, but they adapted pretty well. They got used to their surroundings, and hey, they're ready, you know. I had dogs when I was a kid, since I was little. You know, I just love dogs. My dad bought me my first German Shepherd. I think I was like 8 years old. I'm 55 now, so it's been a long journey. So I'm always going to have a dog in my life. So, yeah.
My name is Roger Ward. Been with the Greyhound program for about 5.5, 6 years. This program brings back some of the humanity that you lose by doing time. When you've been down for a long period of time, sometimes you find yourself focusing on you because that's all you have within this prison environment. But after the first dog or two, you start to feel that come back. You start to feel human again. You start to feel a purpose in life.
Jerry, sit. Very good. Good job. Shake my hand, Jerry. Shake. Yes, good job, man.
I'm Mario Collier. I've been in the TGIE program for almost 9 years now.
Stan, yes.
They learn just like any other dog. When we first got them, people would even believe that they would sit. Now they can't. They don't want to do anything but sit. You know, and it all comes from not being given an opportunity. And it makes it relatable to us as inmates that's training them, because we've sort of wind up in the same predicament. Not all of us have a pass, and none of them match what we've been doing since we've been in this program. The dogs have transformed, and so have we. It's a great program.
Dude, sit. Down. I think he'd be manageable. He still had them little quirks to him that a hound do, you know, bark. He's coming a long way so far.
You can see this is a big area. This is just one of the gardens.
Working in the vegetable gardens I mentioned earlier is a privilege. You have to have enough points for good behavior before you can raise vegetables.
Well, I'm growing peppers, banana peppers, bell peppers. This is all okra. I had a real good harvest of okra this year. And I'm learning all about horticulture. They give me books to read and stuff. This is my first time growing vegetables.
Larry Kreslaw has been in prison since 1977. His life at Lakeland is very different than what he found in other prisons.
But I got some different herbs and stuff. I've got cilantro. This is all cilantro growing right there. And these are like tomatitos, they're little tomatoes. See that little part right there? It's a real sweet. I never even heard of these. Some guy showed them to me and I said, damn, you know, they're real sweet, dude. They're good.
Some of these vegetable gardens are for the prisoners' own use. Most of the inmates complain about the prison food and that there's not enough food. If you get to garden, you can supplement your diet. But the overall horticulture program grows produce that goes other places, as Fred Proctor explained.
I'm watering the peppers. These peppers are for, we grow specialty peppers in here for the food tech class up there for their cooking special meals and stuff that they do on Thursdays.
Food Tech is a culinary program teaching some of the inmates about the hospitality industry. We'll hear more about that a little later. There is another garden, the Donation Garden, where the produce is given to surrounding communities.
This is where we grow vegetables for the Branch County Food Bank. And as of this year so far, we've produced almost 20,000 pounds of vegetables for them.
Inmate Jason Ward was busy doing some fall cleaning in his plot, pulling out cabbage heads that are finished for the year. Other stuff is just about there.
Got some beans kicking still. Red beans, them are red beans there. And they're almost, they're not fully mature just yet. But you see the, you got the little pot and little beans inside it.
Ward points out the okra. He's not a fan. Someone else will have to eat that.
These are snap peas. Got your little peas inside.
Ward likes them. There are a lot of older inmates here. Many are in for their entire life. Jason Ward is younger, but he, like everyone, shares a garden plot with someone else.
I share a garden with an elderly man that's actually disabled. And so I keep the upkeep on it, and I harvest stuff, and I bring to my partner. So he has a hard time getting out here with his walker.
The acting warden, Brian Morrison, says one of the concerning things was the garden plots were not accessible to some of the prisoners.
So what we did is we built elevated gardens that they can roll up to with their wheelchair and give them the opportunity to work in the garden as well. We also have prisoner aides here that they assess some of the other guys that aren't wheelchair bound but maybe have difficulty traversing the grass. They still assist them to get in the area so they can actually get their hands in the dirt. Give them the same feeling and the enjoyment that the other prisoners have of being able to accomplish something.
Larry Kressler says this first year of gardening for him has been a good one.
I'm proud of the fact that I did it myself, you know. And it gives you an incentive to stay good, you know. I eat the best when I got my own garden, you know.
Jason Ward said he's just glad he's getting his hands in the dirt.
I like working in the garden. I did it a lot with my mom and my dad when I was a young kid in Oklahoma, and you know, it just kind of, it's something to do. It's productive instead of counterproductive, which a lot of people do a lot of counterproductive things in here, you know.
And Fred Proctor says he's committed to the penitentiary's horticulture program.
I stay involved with this horticulture program. This is kind of like my life here. You know, I really enjoy doing this. And when I have younger guys come down there, I kind of mentor them and teach them how to garden and stuff like that with the horticulture program.
In addition to growing vegetables for the community and for themselves at Lakeland Correctional Facility, there's a concerted effort to offer programs to keep the prisoners busy and others to help them improve their lives, even if they're never getting out. Mike Gallup is the recreation director. He's been doing that job for the Michigan Department of Corrections for about 20 years, the last 4.5 at Lakeland.
We've got volleyball, softball, basketball, all these different leagues, over 40 leagues. We're transitioning currently from the outdoor sports to the indoor stuff. We do like bowling and pinochle club and volleyball, pickleball, basketball, 3-on-3, March Madness. We have floor hockey and stuff like that on the inside. We've got 17 different music bands that we have here. They perform concerts once a month. It's pretty busy. We try and keep them busy. So that's a few of the things that we do.
We're going to hear from one of those bands in just a moment. But first, why? Why a recreation director and all these activities at a prison?
Is it our job to keep them busy? Well, yeah, in a way it is. I mean, everyone, idle hands is the devil's workshop. So if we didn't have all this stuff for them to do, they'd be doing something else. So
after he thought about it, Gallup wanted to add that they also have soccer, horseshoe leagues, bocce ball, billiards, And then there's the most popular activity.
I think probably our weightlifting competition, when a guy lifts 715 pounds on a deadlift, and that really gets guys pumped up because they love watching that stuff.
Let's hear about one of Lakeland Correction Facility's 17 bands.
The Lakeland Cavaliers. My name is Daryl Wagner. I'm from Bath, Michigan. Yeah, I'm a guitar player since I was 4 years old. It's my life. Without music, I would just cease to exist.
Well, my name is Herbert Dunnies. I've been here at Lakeland approximately about 13 years. I'm from the west side of Detroit, and my church was Progressive Apostolic Faith Church of God. I used to watch this young lady named Angela. And she was our organist there. And I was always fascinated about the organ and keyboard and piano. And she played, and I used to watch her play and stuff. And I play by ear. And anything I hear as far as commercials and stuff like that, I'd be playing. It's an inspiration. It helps me throughout my day, you know what I'm saying? Throughout my day, going as far as working and stuff like that, you know, inspiration. Playing really, like, relaxes me and stuff like that. It's like a release for me.
I'm David Ward, and I am originally from Pontiac area. I've been here about 9 years. I am holding a Squire jazz bass, but I'm more of a six-string player. Actually, I'm more of a rhythm and lead guitar player. This is my first foray into playing bass, so it's kind of fun. There's just not enough words to describe it. It's such a release. First off, this is a gift. This is a God-given gift to me, just to have the talent to be able to play music and to be able to express that. It doesn't matter how bad you can feel or how upbeat you feel. When you start playing, it's just that flow of emotion, and it's just really, it's a balm, is what it is. It really is just a comforting to the, you know, to the soul, and it's a blessing beyond words. It really truly is, and we're grateful that this is a wonderful place for the music program. They've been very accommodating, and you know, to let us do shows and to practice and everything like that. It's been really a blessing.
Okay, so right now we're getting lunch ready. Today we're gonna have a roasted beef tenderloin with a squash sauce that is also has a demi glaze, and it'll be sitting on top of creamed leeks.
The food technology program is a culinary arts class at Lakeland. The course is designed to give the inmates real skills for life after prison.
My name is Jimmy Lee Hill. I'm the executive chef instructor here at Lakeland Correctional Facility in the Culinary Arts Program, and I've been here for 30 years. We get the guys ready for after incarceration. So basically what we do is we teach them everything from safety and sanitation to catering and everything in between. It is my hopes that I get them ready to go to more of high scale dining so that they can secure a job enough to where they can support their families.
But what about the men serving a life sentence? There were two men in the program we met who are both serving life. They help teach and mentor the other inmates. And on the day we visited Lakeland, they showed off their cooking skills with an incredible four-course meal.
Okay, as soon as this gets to its smoking point, we're going to start dropping the scallops in.
Well, this is the garde manger department. So what we do over here is cold salads. We also do soups and some other different types of salads. Well, my name is Christopher Dorch. I'm from Detroit, Michigan. I've been at this facility for about 4 years, and I've been in food tech something about a year now. These will be pan-seared scallops. They'll be going for a corn scallop and bacon salad. Well, I've been to many different facilities. I've been locked up now for something like 28 years. So I've been to various different facilities, and this program is unlike any program that I've seen at any other facility. It gives you the opportunity so that you can develop your skills, so that you can express yourself, and so that you can make a contribution. And I think that's mainly because of the instructor that we have, Chef Jimmy Hill. He allows us the freedom to be able to experiment, but not go crazy. I think that's important.
I'm going to do the first one, kind of give you a demonstration, and then what I want you to do is you'll take over doing what it is that you see me doing.
When I was in the free world, I was doing short order cook, also in fast food restaurants. In other facilities, I've been clerk, production cook, actually diet cook, all the positions actually in food service. I've worked those, vegan cook, what else? A lot of different things.
You can see it starting to get to the smoke point. At that point, we know that our grease is pretty much ready. It's very important when we're doing these scallops that we have a hot pan.
To get through my time, I do things like I draw. I love to cook and bake. Actually, I love baking more so than anything else, but educating myself a lot, that helps me. What I hope personally to get for myself is an opportunity to grow, to build myself, to acquire some skills so that I'll be able to, if I do leave upon release, I'll have the necessary skills to do the things that I enjoy doing. I would hope that other individuals would get from it, not simply the skills as far as the cooking, but the personal skills the chef teaches, the humility, those qualities that we need in order to express our true humanity. Yeah.
My name is Charles Ralston. I'm from Lapeer County, and right now I'm just braising these beef tenderloins in some rosemary and thyme and butter, and I'll put them on a pan and we'll finish roasting them in the oven to medium. And I'm about ready to put a few more on. I first took this program in 1992 under Chef Jimmy Hill, and I got out and came back, and I've been here for 7 years as a tutor now. These spices were in the garden 10 minutes ago. Right before I started, I went out and picked them. What I'm here for is to facilitate what Chef does, because he's only one person. We have 50 people in the class. I help with the math, and I'm a sous chef, so I help with the kitchen work and the cutting and teaching them, and just try to give them some skills so when they go out there, they can know what they're doing and not just be thrown into a fast food situation. Everything in that we could have used from the garden, we did today. We still have stuff out there like cabbage and carrots, and another run of lettuce is coming, and we have kale. And this program is my whole life. And we're just talking about this morning about dreaming and stuff. Sometimes I'll be sleeping and I'll wake up and with an idea and I want to tell Chef, but you know, I just go back to sleep. It's the opposite of a nightmare. It's a unique opportunity to teach these guys and see their faces when you show them something and the light comes on and you just see it in their faces. And I mean, it hits you in the heart, you know what I mean? That you're doing something that is actually means something. Something that they'll take with them and they'll remember for the rest of their life. Just baste them a little bit with this butter and rosemary and thyme and give them some nice flavor. Something so simple just makes things taste so good. You'll enjoy it in a few minutes.
You're listening to special coverage on Stateside, Life on the Inside. As much as both inmates and corrections staff talk about the Lakeland Correctional Facility as the best place to be, it's still a prison. Bad things happen. Local news coverage in the Coldwater area includes stories about drug overdoses and death, stabbings, assaults on corrections officers. Officer John Hoth says that stress takes its toll.
I have seen a lot of suicide, a lot of stress-related issues with divorce and, you know, even stuff further down the road than suicide. It can be a bad environment.
He says in the main housing units where the older inmates stay, it's not that bad, but there is other housing in big steel buildings they call pole barns at Lakeland. It's different there.
If you go over to our pole barns and to other facilities throughout the state that are dealing with younger populations and, you know, more violent populations, it's bad. It's bad. It's a tough job. You know, it can be a rough environment. And, you know, of course, you got some tough guys that go through some stuff and they don't want to talk about it. And that's starting to loosen up a little bit, too.
I brought this subject up with acting warden Brian Morrison. He agreed the stress can get bad.
It does. And I'm glad to say that we have a new wellness team that is doing wonderful things. I hired in roughly 20-some years ago. You were taught to kind of bottle your stuff up and just move on. We realized that.
Tough guy. Yeah.
Tough guy. Yes, you were expected to be a tough guy. We realized that is not the best. Unfortunately, we've had some suicides of our fellow correctional officers. It's a very sad moment for all of us. We realized that we need to have some staff wellness. We need to be able to talk and discuss and care about ourselves and make our families aware of the types of things and that they we're a cohesive unit so that we have the bonding of the family when you're there too as well. So we don't always have to pretend like everything's fine around our families.
The job is tough. Besides the risk of violence, some officers have the job of patrolling outdoors, whether it's 20 degrees below or 100 degrees in the blazing sun. But most people are aware of those hardships when they sign up for the job. There's another thing that's unexpected. Officer Chad Pointer says even when they're off work, they're still on guard.
You know, honestly, the hardest part of the job is it's always staying on point. It's always having that, you know, what if. You're always running scenarios in your head. You know, it's kind of hard to shut off sometimes. You know, you'll go to a restaurant and we all sit the same way. We all sit facing towards the door. You know, Myers, you'll start seeing things. You'll start seeing people maybe pocket something. And, you know, it's hard to turn off sometimes. It's hard to turn off the CO. And I think that's the hardest part of the job right there.
There is yet another kind of stress. This comes from the state of Michigan. Around the state, prisons are shorthanded. It's hard to hire new corrections officers, and it's hard to keep them when the state finds new hires. That's led to a lot of mandatory overtime, even for senior staff who are not supposed to be on the mandatory call list, like Kurt Breckheisen.
I've been mandatory more this past year being off the mandatory list with seniority than I ever got mandatory when I was on it for the last, you know, previous 20 years. That's how short we are, and that's how it affects, and that's statewide.
Radio check 16.
At the heart of the prison, Tanya Reinhart monitors cameras around the facility, radio traffic, alarms.
Open gate number 2.
She has to be very aware of everything in case an officer needs help. It's stressful on the best days, but imagine when she has to work 16-hour shifts.
This past summer, I was working anywhere from 3 to 5 or 6 overtime shifts in a pay period, in a 2-week period. That's exhausting.
It also means missing kids' sports, band concerts, and school plays, not to mention your partner. That's another issue I asked Acting Warden Brian Morrison about. Lakeland is short on staff, according to the Department of Corrections. How many vacancies do you have?
I believe I have 38 right now.
38?
Yes.
So what's that mean for the facility?
It means some staff don't get to go home because no matter what, we have to have a certain number here. And if we can't get volunteers to work the overtime, people are going to get mandated.
Will you be filling those positions anytime soon?
Hopefully. You know, we have had some relief in the last year by getting some more staff out of the academies. It would only improve the morale even more if we had more staff here and we could eliminate the mandates. Anytime that you can reduce the amount of time that staff are made to stay here, only good things come from it.
The prison population at Lakeland Correctional Facility is notably older. There's even a geriatric care center because men sentenced to life in prison are here until their life ends. Not everyone thinks they're getting the care they need. Kevin Ragland is 60 years old, and he says he wakes up in pain and goes to bed in pain. He was shot 30 years ago, and he eventually started having back problems because of that and needed lumbar fusion surgery.
My problem started about 5 years ago, and I had surgery 2 years ago in 2017, June of 2017, and I'm still experiencing excruciating back pain. I can't get the proper pain medication, things of that nature.
This is not the only complaint about access to medical care we heard during our visit to Lakeland. Some of the prisoners are very ill, and on the outside, some would be in nursing homes. Instead, the medical staff at the prison helps them. I talked to Christine Pigg, who is the acting director of nursing at Lakeland.
How expensive, since you've got this older population, does it get to properly care for these inmates at Lakeland?
Tens of thousands of dollars a month for some of them. Tens of thousands.
Wow.
Their medications, some of them are on medications that cost thousands of dollars a day. And for the most part, many of them are quite involved and invested in their care. So they do want to be compliant. They do want to do what is right, and we want to make sure that they do get what's necessary to make sure that appropriate outcomes are had for them.
The Michigan Department of Corrections contracts out for primary care, psychiatric care, pharmacy, and off-site coverage. It uses a company called Corizon. A 5-year contract with the company amounted to more than $715 million. Some other states use Corizon as well. There have been more than 1,000 lawsuits filed against the company, at least 89 in Michigan. We had a chance to talk with the Corrections Department Director of the Bureau of Healthcare Services, Marty K. Sherry, and I asked her, what is Corizon's track record like in Michigan?
Well, they've been with us on this contract for now going on 4 years. So you're correct, they provide primary care, psychiatric coverage, and pharmacy along with off-site coverage. We have had some issues with the contract. One of the pieces that we developed was a contract monitoring unit, and the contract monitoring unit does a lot of on-site visits. We do a lot of monitoring of their care. We do a lot of review from our clinical pieces. We've done corrective action plans to address these issues with them. We've also involved the Department of Management and Budget, DTMB, as well. Since then, we've seen some resolution in terms of the issues. We're continuing to track and follow them. We do monthly contract meetings with them where we address issues. And I spoke a bit. We have clinical leadership at the department too that's reviewing those off-site visits and determining if they're appropriate and then making some administrative decisions if they aren't, and then also working to correct any issues with the clinical side of Corizon as well.
Well, while at Lakeland Correctional Center, one of our reporters, Dustin Dwyer, talked to a man sentenced to life. He's served 42 years in Michigan prisons. He's 70 years old today. He says he was sent to the University of Michigan, and it was recommended that he get an MRI after finding an enlarged prostate, which, you know, could be a sign of prostate cancer.
I've been waiting for MRI for two years now. They won't give me one. They think I got prostate cancer. But they still haven't approved MRI.
Are you dealing with pain or issues on a daily basis?
Yes. I have prostate cancer. I mean, well, I know I have an enlarged prostate, and it's almost impossible to urinate, you know? And they sent me here for surgery, but I'm still waiting for the MRI.
The state has fined Corizon for violating requirements for timely care in the past. Is this possibly another example of that?
Well, with a case like this, we would definitely need to look a little bit further into it and look at the case. What happens is these usually come to our chief medical officer. There's the ability for her to review those cases and then make a determination. If an MRI was denied, then she could look at it, determine if it's necessary, and then request that Corizon issue it. I mean, without knowing further specifics of that case, we do have cases where Corizon a provider might recommend someone go off-site for a test. They might try something much like the community and do like an alternative treatment plan that might mean physical therapy or other things before they do something. Those ATPs, alternative treatment plans, we review a sample of those and then look at those cases to determine if they should be or if they should be directed for care. So I do think we have a checks and balances system in place where we would catch these. It's also, we have a grievance process too, where the prisoners can grieve these issues and we review those as well and provide responses.
Well, for the record, this man's name was Archie Baker. So if you've got somebody who looks into these things, maybe this might be one to check out. Corizon gets paid a lump sum payment. Then it's up to the private company's discretion as to what care is given there, except for the monitoring, as you mentioned. There does not appear to be a lot of incentive to hire a lot of staff or provide costly services. So how do we know whether inmates in Michigan are really getting the care they need? Because you can't monitor everything everywhere.
Well, we do assess, you mentioned the service level agreements and the penalties that we've assessed in those amounts. Those amounts directly relate to timeliness of care. So we do look at those by policy. They have to see those people within a certain time frame within our policy. So we do look at those cases. The facility is monitoring them closely as well to ensure that they're seen. We also have a process in place where at a higher level, they have to come up with a plan. If there's certain facilities where they're not seeing those folks timely, then they would have to come up with a plan on how they're going to address that.
Earlier this year, it was revealed that there were 86 vacant nurse positions and 44 vacant licensed practical nurse positions within the Department of Corrections. I talked with the acting director of nursing at Lakeland, Christine Pigg, about those vacancies.
Retention and recruitment is a very real issue for the department. So anybody in nursing school who's looking for jobs, please look at this as a very real possibility.
I was going to joke, what's the starting pay? But actually, what is this starting pay for an entry-level nurse?
It depends on experience, so I would encourage somebody to look at the department website. As far as caring for the inmates, it's very rewarding. I've done it for 25 years, and we haven't looked back. It's a very important job, and I truly value what we do.
Why is it so hard to hire and retain nurses?
Well, one of the challenges we face is the salaries. It's difficult in corrections, for people don't really want to come into corrections. They're concerned about safety, dealing with prisons. We're also competing with hospitals that have more competitive salaries than what we do. Additionally, hospitals will have sign-on and definitely higher retention bonuses than
Let me stop you for a second, because I want to understand that you keep saying we do. Is it the Department of Corrections who sets the pay, or if it's a private contract with Corizon, does Corizon set the pay? And if they're not attracting the right people, then is everybody getting the care they need because they're shorthanded?
Well, the nurses are State of Michigan employees, so they're not Corizon nurses. They're not employed by Corizon. Corizon just employs the physicians and the psychiatrists. The Michigan Department of Corrections doesn't set that pay rate. Civil Service is the one that sets the pay rate, and we have been working and advocating with Civil Service to increase that rate.
Okay, so the problem then is Michigan isn't paying enough. The State of Michigan is not paying enough for these positions to attract people.
Yes.
How do you fix that?
I think we've had some ongoing conversations in this area. We continue to advocate for that. We are looking at other avenues, too. We're working with colleges directly. We found that we've been successful if we can get people in from colleges and do internships. So we try to recruit them. We do a lot of career fairs as well, where we can offer things, you know, regular pay, hours, benefits has been an incentive as well. So that's one of the things. And again, like I said, we're continuing to work with Civil Service as well.
In the meantime, how do you measure whether the people incarcerated in Michigan are getting the same level of care under the private contract with Corizon as they did under the state-run healthcare service?
Well, one of the issues we had with the state-run one is we couldn't pay enough to retain doctors and psychiatrists. So we've had to go out and contract for those, much like other correctional states do as well. It's just one of the challenges in this environment is that piece of it. So I think through our monitoring, through our clinical oversight, we ensure to the best of our abilities that people are providing the appropriate care. We have many processes in place. Prisoners themselves can request healthcare services. We'll review those. We'll speak to them.
How are people sentenced to life in prison prioritized when it comes to health care?
We don't prioritize health care by their sentence or by their requirements. Everyone that comes into health care is screened annually. If they have chronic health conditions, they're seen more frequently. A prisoner can request services, so it has nothing to do with their sentence, their date, any of that.
Marty K. Sherry is the Acting Health Services Administrator for the Department of Corrections Bureau of Health Care Services. Thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
We found the inmate who has been at Lakeland longer than anyone else. Richard Thompson was transferred there in 1988. He says it was a different place then.
It was very nice back then. There was 600 people here. We had a store that you could walk up. Anytime the yard was open, we had tokens that we used. Walk up and buy anything that was in the store. And 7 days a week, it was really, really nice.
Today, there are more than 1,400 prisoners at Lakeland. Thompson is nearly 80 years old, and he's seen a lot of men come and go. He has some observations about his fellow inmates. When he entered the system, he was nearly 45 years old. Some of the Lakeland inmates were incarcerated as teenagers.
And I've always noticed that you pretty much stay the same age the whole time you're in here. If you come in as an old man, a young man, you stay the young man. You don't revert back to childhood ways unless you get dementia or something like that. But if you come in as a teenager, you're a teenager no matter how old you are.
Thompson says he has a few close friends, but not many. He does have one guy he keeps a close eye on.
He has dementia, and I hang out with him quite a bit, mainly to make sure he doesn't get into trouble. He likes to go outside when he's not supposed to. He doesn't understand even that he's in prison. His mind is just going on him, and I've been friends with him for about 4 years now, I guess, and I've seen him get worse and worse, and I just try to help him the best I can.
Thompson recently lost one of his close friends, a guy named Dave Patak. In fact, he lived right next door.
He was a quiet person. He loved his garden. He loved the animals. We have some wild cats that live here from time to time, and he'd feed them all the time, and they would never get friendly enough that he could hold them, but they came begging from him every day just at a certain time. He was a good friend, that's all I can say. I mean, if I needed anything, he would help me out, and I'd help him with anything he needed.
Patak, like a lot of people here, had been sentenced to life in prison for a crime. But Thompson says he was a gentle soul, friendly to everyone.
I really liked him a lot. And I think just about everybody in this building liked him. I can't say the same about me, but...
When an inmate dies in prison, it's listed in their official records as their discharge date. At Dave Patak's garden, there's a bench that was pretty much his bench. That's where he was sitting when he was discharged on August 28th, just a few weeks before our visit. One lifer took it upon himself to make sure there was something to mark his old friend's time at Lakeland.
My name is James Wayne Wilson. We had a guy here named Dave Patak. He's been a long time here. He took care of all this area here, all of this, and kept it all swept up, cleaned up real good, took care of the flowers, and he passed away on that bench. And so I decided to do a memorial for him, and that's what I did. And I know him for about 42 years. 42, that's how long I've been locked up. You know, he was a good guy, man. He's a real, real decent guy and real kind to everybody. He never had anything bad to say about anyone. He was just a real decent guy. That was 1978 when I met him. Yeah. It was rough. It was bad. I was in the chow hall, and I came out of the chow hall, and somebody said, Dave Patak is down. And I said, well, dang, I come down, and they already had people getting him on the ground here, and they had the nurses and stuff out when I got here. So I couldn't even come out here or anything, because they wouldn't let us out. So I had the stone built, yep. I put that up. He liked birds, he liked cats and flowers, so that's what I had put on there.
No matter how nice the Lakeland Correctional Facility seems, all prisons are designed, built, and staffed to keep people from leaving, keep them on the inside. The high fences and razor wire, the locked and guarded doors, the correctional officers patrolling are all reminders of that. For most of the men we met sentenced to life in prison, those fences are stark reminders of the limits placed on their lives. Many of them are never getting out. But there is no locked door, no guard tower, no fence to stop the mind from wandering, from dreaming.
There was a time when I was young, and I'd found a little rabbit. It was a baby, it was a bunny at a church. And I tried to sneak him home in a car. And years later, I would have this dream again about this bunny. After I grew up, I had the dream back again about the bunny. And I was wondering, like, what was that about? Why did this bunny come back into my life again after all these years? And I'd say probably 2 months ago, I was walking through the compound here, and I saw a rabbit. And once again, I had that flashback of that dream again of the bunny, you know. So life is interesting.
My name is Ephraim Paredes, Jr. I'm a Michigan prisoner. I've been incarcerated since the age of 15. I'm now 46 years old, so I've been incarcerated 30 years.
When you come to prison, your dreams become imprisoned, it seems like. You know, you start to... The things that you think about, if you don't stay active mentally, and I believe emotionally and spiritually, you begin to become mentally incarcerated.
One would think that it is kind of your escape from here, but for me, it hasn't. My name is Robert Prince. Since I've been in, my dreams have been facility related one way or the other. You know, I'll catch myself, I'll be out doing something, and then I have to get back to my room. It's count time, you know, or I might be out of place, out of bounds somewhere, you know, I have to get back to my room, you know.
It's weird, actually. It's like I've had dreams to where I've been walking with my brother or my sister, and we're having a conversation, and when you look around in a dream, it's somewhat of a prison. I've had a dream actually where I was driving a car in prison. Like, we're riding around and we're talking and we're seeing different things, but mentally and visually, we were in the prison. My name is Elliot LaShawn Whittington. I'm from Saginaw, Michigan. When I have dreams of outside dreams, it's like, I want to say, feeling like my dreams came true inside my dream and not for real in real life. It's a hurting feeling to dream and be free and wake up and to be looking at the bottom of a steel bunk. It's like it's a crushing blow to have a dream that you're free and you're around family and loved ones and then it's over and you wake up and you're just like, you have to take a breath for a second and really sit back and mentally think about what's really going on and the things that you can do to accomplish your dreams.
One of the things we noticed was the symbiosis between the correction staff and the prisoners. There's an element of trust. It's guarded, but it is there. Prisoners make the prison work. Able-bodied prisoners assist in the care of the sick and old inmates. The prisoners cook. They're given knives. The gardeners have garden tools. Certainly everything is counted. Everyone is counted. But this prison would not be the same without a certain amount of cooperation between inmate and officer. One corrections officer said he respected the men in the prison, and he certainly expected respect in return. The balance might be precarious, but for the most part, it appears to the outsider that inmate and officer are part of the same community. A prison is a community. You've been listening to Life on the Inside. This week's series would not have been possible without the great work by Mercedes Mejia, April Van Buren, Laura Weber Davis, Mike Blank, Dustin Dwyer, Adam Reyes, Tad Davis, Bella Isaacs Thomas, Catherine Newhan, and Bob Scon, the team that spent the day at Lakeland Correctional Facility. The digital team of Jody Westrick, Emma Winowicki, Paulette Parker, and Katie Raymond created some gorgeous Instagram posts and the website for the project. You can find it at lakeland.michiganradio.org. A special thanks to photographer John Patrick McGuire for some incredible images, and thanks to Michigan Radio's senior editor, Sarah Hewlett. We'd also like to extend our appreciation to the Michigan Department of Corrections and acting warden Brian Morrison and his staff at Lakeland Correctional Facility, as well as the inmates who were willing to open up to us. The executive producer of Life on the Inside is Joe Lindstroth. We're going to leave you now with a little bit more of the band, the Lakeland Cavaliers. I'm Lester Graham. Thanks for listening.